Okay, this coming week we're going to have the honor and the privilege of reading Parshas Chukas. And of course, the Parsha begins, Zos Chukas HaTorah. And the Medrash comments ideally that Shlomo HaMelech came to the section of the Torah and he realized that despite all of the knowledge of the world that he had, he couldn't come to figure out this message. Amati Achakma, I said I was going to use my intellect to figure it out. Vehi Rechoka Mimeni. He couldn't understand the concept. How was something that would make the Tamei Tahor also able to make the Tahor Tamei? Why is it that we demonstrate Kavod Abrios to someone by interrupting Shema for him and not the Shmona Esrei, as per the Gemara and Yuma on Daf Yutes Amud Beis? How is it that in the same bracha we say Baruch Atah Hashem, we speak of Hashem in the second person, and then switch to the third, Asher, Hamotzi, whatever the case is, in the third person, which introduces a level of distance in the relationship? These things don't make sense on their rational basis, or so it would seem. So Maran Rav Shachter Shalita would often remind us that if in the world of quantum physics a particle can indeed be in two places at one time and can travel in an infinite number of directions at once, so then it's absolutely impossible to explain quantum phenomena using traditional principles of physics. And if in the natural world there seems to be glaring contradictions, we ought not to be surprised if in halacha as well there seem to be what apparently appears in the Derech HaChaim to be contradictions. And understanding that religion will not resolve any contradictions at all. If anything, it makes us aware of more contradictions. And therefore, one needs to understand when one studies Torah, all of Torah is one big chukah. The entire creation is one big chukah. That's what Rosh Hashanah would constantly remind us. And thus, the Midrashim on the opening pasuk in Bereishis make the comment that Istaka Baraisu Bara Alma, that God looked into the Torah and used it as a blueprint for creation, because all of nature is interconnected with the Torah. But just as the study of physics guides us to maneuver with all of the contradictions in the natural realm, so too halacha guides us how we should deal with what appear to be contradictions in the spiritual realm. And therefore, the fact that there is a contradiction is not a reason for us to throw up our hands and say, therefore, les din v'les dayan, God forbid. So then we read the story of the Tamei and how he becomes Tahor through the process of Paraduma. And then the Torah offers a summation pasuk, unfortunately right in the middle, Zos HaTorah Adam Kiyamatz Ba'ohel. This is the Torah when a person dies in the tent. And the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis quotes Rav Yonason, who notes that one should not absent himself from Torah study even in his final hours, based on the pasuk, Zos HaTorah Adam Kiyamatz Ba'ohel. So why is it that the time to be in the Beis Medrash is to be literally when one is on his death? How is that supposed to make any sense? Why does the Torah want us to understand that? So Rav Kook Zatzal, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, explained that lest the person think of Torah as merely a moral code, which is just applicable only when one's alive. Therefore, the ability for one to study while one is on one's own deathbed, the obligation for one to engage in Torah study, even when one is on one's own deathbed, teaches that the Torah's messages are applicable even in the great beyond. One doesn't say, I'll lose my opportunity, what's the big deal? What's the point of studying a halacha if I'm never going to get a chance to keep it? By using the metaphor of the Torah's Ha'ohel, Rav Yonason highlighted that the tent that was a fellowship of Torah scholars, the mind sharpening milieu of the Beis Medrash, that it's not just that a person is sitting alone, but rather he's in the great Torah, not only to cultivate friendship and camaraderie, but rather the fact that one studies in a Beis HaMedrash, in collective study, that sanctifies time and elevates life. Zos HaTorah Adam Kiyamas Bo'el, a person doesn't wind up in the Ohel alone. Zos Chukas HaTorah, that even in a world that appears to be contradictory, there's always room for growth within Torah. And then the Torah tells us, V'lakach eso v'tavau b'mayim ish tahor, v'hizah la'ov v'alakol ha'kelim, that the tahor should go ahead and dip it in the water. Who is this ish tahor? Who is the tahor person who's dipping the ezov in the water? So Targum Yonason explains that that person has to be a Kohen. But the Gemara in Yuma on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph notes that the Hazoya can be done by any male, whether he's a Kohen or not a Kohen. And Tosus notes that that's because Hazoya is not considered an Avoda. So if that's the case, how come Targum Yonason assumed that it has to be done by a Kohen? So the Gon Tzadik Kabbalist Rabban Gamliel Rabinovich Shalita explains that perhaps Targum Yonason is merely teaching us how it was most likely done. It was most likely done by a Kohen. He adds that alternatively, it's possible that for the first Parah Aduma, it had to be done by a Kohen specifically. After all, the Mishnayos in Yuma in the ninth parak highlight there many, many differences between Paraso Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, between the Parah of Moshe Rabbeinu and other Paros that were offered later on. The Parsha then continues and tells us about the death of Miriam and the fact that there was no water for the Eidah. And Moshe Rabbeinu was told to go ahead and to speak to the stone, bring the people together, b'dibartem el ha'sela. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was punished because he was told to speak to the stone, and ultimately something happened within that process. So Rashi explains that the hitting of the stone, when Moshe hit the stone instead of speaking to the stone, he denied the opportunity of the people to learn that they could be moved by words if a stone could. The Or Chaim HaKadosh argues that it was the fact that he called the people Hamorim, Shimuna Hamorim, he called them the rebellious ones. So the author of the Basayan explains that both commentaries really work together along the same lines. Moshe Rabbeinu first referred to the people as Morim, as rebellious people. And then he said that as a result of his sin with his mouth, he couldn't use it effectively in solving their problem. His mouth, or in his opinion, was now tamei, was now not was now exempt from the possibility of being a vehicle to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there, the Basayan adds that this is Moshe Rabbeinu's error. He didn't focus on the fact that after sin and tshuva, Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be able to perform again. The great tzaddik Reb Meilech Biederman Shalita adds that in the name of the Chafetz Chaim, that he also would often comment that when one goes to the doctor says often, stick out your tongue, so a doctor can see the source of the illness. The same thing, the same mouth that sins still has the source of tshuva and Yeshua. Okay. Then the Torah tells us that after Moshe and Aaron get punished for the episode at Mei Meriva, that Aaron HaKohen dies. And the whole congregation, that the whole congregation saw that Aaron HaKohen had expired. And Rashi explains that when Bnei Yisrael saw Moshe and Elazar coming down without Aaron, they couldn't believe that it was possible that the man who stood up against the Malach and he stopped the Magepha, that he, that very person, was going to be overpowered by death. And thereupon the Malachim showed Aaron to them lying in the bed. And when they saw him, then all of a sudden, that's when they believed. So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal related that when his grandfather Reb Chaim passed away, his father Reb Moshe Soloveitchik needed to confirm the news, and so he took on this perilous traveling to Warsaw to in order to confirm in person that indeed his father had passed away. And when asked why he had gone so far just to see that his father had died, why he couldn't trust the newspapers, so Reb Moshe Soloveitchik explained that that when a Rebbe is taken from his students, the students can't conceive of life continuing without him. So they desperately search him, despite the evidence of his passing. So Reb Soloveitchik noted that the same thing held true over here. During the testimony of Aaron's death, the people couldn't accept the bitter reality until they saw it with their own eyes. And then the people complained. And they turned and they complained, V'nafshenu katza b'lechem aklokel, that our souls are sick with this bread, with the man, which dysregulates the digestion. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Hamad Aleph relates that when they made this declaration, Moshe Rabbeinu told them, you are kfuye tova, b'nei kfuye tova. You are people who are brazen, who deny reality. B'nei Adam Harishon, who was also a kafuy tov. So Reb Nachum Parsavitz Hatzal, the famous mirror of Shiva, asks why Moshe Rabbeinu has to say kfuye tova, b'nei kfuye tova, and drag them right back to Adam Harishon. What was to be gained within that process? So Reb Nachum answered that Moshe Rabbeinu was providing an explanation for the people's behavior. By mentioning Adam HaRishon, he was noting a phenomenon about mankind in general, that they do not regularly have Hakaras HaTov, and so therefore maybe that would be a hamlatza, a means of serving as a defense of why Bnei Yisrael were acting the way they did. At towards the end of the Sedra, we also read about the Shiras HaBe'er, that the Az Yashir, that they said, Az Yashir Yisrael, Asashira Sosa Liber Enula. They sang Ashira and they sang Be'er Chafarua Sarim Karaua bin Idibeyam. This section known as the Shira Saber gets leaned melodically. So Rabbi Weinreb Shalita, the famous Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, the famous former head of the Orthodox Union, former Rav in Baltimore, noted that this section, this Shira, is different than the Shira Sayam because it came at a time period when there was a point of transition from Moshe Aaron and Miriam's leadership to a different form. And instead of being led in Shira, B'nai Yisrael sang together. And thus the people find their voice. And that voice, said Rabbi Weinreb, is the voice of song. And that's what the Alkut Shemoni in Parshas Chukas explains, that this is a culmination of a process of maturation. We need to know that when prominent leaders are not apparent, we all have to assume leadership responsibilities. And in those moments, we must each find our own voices and sing the songs of leadership. Allow me to add to Rabbi Weinreb's thought. I think it was the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwich, who used to tell us all the time that in the process of dancing, that he never liked the people who rushed to dance in the middle without holding hands. He didn't like the dances of Eden and all those other dances as well. He said the whole idea behind a rikud is the understanding that I hold your hand and you hold mine. I'm holding on to you and you're holding on to me, and together we rise up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And similarly, Rabbi Bleich Shalita, my Rebbe, one of my Rebbeim in Yeshivas, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, Rabbi Black, would also tell us that the same thing is true when it comes to tefillah. Everybody's always worried who's going to dam for an amud, who's going to be able to have this prayer group and that prayer, that particular minyan, and this age-oriented, and young couples, and old couples, and middle-aged couples, and senior couples, and all this other stuff. Rabbi Black said to us, he didn't understand the whole nature. The bottom line is that the Tefillah B'Tzibur is an opportunity for a symphony. And when a song or a symphony is sung, and everybody has their own piece, everybody has their place to play, then all of a sudden there is going to be success. So when you have a leader, a conductor, like a Moshe and an Aaron, like Rabbi Weinreb is suggesting over here, then there's a basis for an opportunity. But when the leader, the conductor, is not as overtly ideal, that is to say, that when the leadership is not going to be able to immediately direct you to sit in this place and hold your instrument in this way, but rather the leadership is there to conduct, then the individuals who are there have more of an obligation not to bypass their roles, but to find their seats at the symphony, to make sure that they're playing their instrument most correctly, because they have to aid the conductor in his process. And that's the real message of the Shira Saber, that we need to go ahead in these moments when we don't have a Moshe leading us in the Shira. We may have a different type of leader, a different person who's preparing to take over. In that case, our job is to aid him from our place so that the symphony continues to play majestically and proudly. Finally, in the process, we read the Haftorah from the book of Shoftim. And we read about how Yiftach ran away from his brothers and settled in an area called Eretz Tov. And the question has to be asked, why did Yiftach run away to that place? Why did he run to Eretz Tov? So the Chidar explains that Yiftach ran this far in order to be outside of the land of Israel, so he shouldn't bump into his brothers while being Ola Rega, which could touch off a degree of Machlokes. The Ber Moshe of Ozerov added that this is why the land was called Tov as opposed to Tova, and that it was the opposite of the second day of creation, where we see that the word Tov is not used, since he via Machlokes Liolam and involved a chiluk, a split. In this land was a place that existed that prevented a split within Am Yisrael as a result of the running there that Yiftach engaged in. Rabbi Honus in Eibeshitz explains that he ran away, Yiftach ran away, since his brothers kicked him out, and he therefore didn't know what gate was he going to go into the Beis HaMikdash through every time he was going to be Ola Regel, because each Shevet had a specific date and a specific gate. And so if he didn't want to go into the Beis HaMikdash and get himself into a difficult situation, he needed a place to stop. Sometimes it's better to run to the other side of the world in order to avoid Machloikas. Well, we're in a world today where machloikas just seems to be all over in Yerushalayim, and with people worried about knowing their place and where they are and where they come from and how they fit in. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bench us with wisdom to realize that in these days, true leaders are not necessarily the ones who scream the loudest. True leaders are the ones who are able to make sure that no matter where we come from, we continue to play that symphony loudly and brilliantly. Shabbat Shalom to all.